sad for the circumstance that causes him to be here, but did get moved, and I'm at least living in the new house here in Eugene, facing the daunting 10-minute commute to get here this morning. I managed to find everything. I was pretty careful to pack a pair of socks and some underwear and a tie and, you know, all the things that I knew I was going to need. There are some things that are really hard to find because they're so little. For those of you who wear hearing aids, you know how small those batteries are? Well, they're in a box somewhere. And my hearing aids are now functioning as really good earplugs. So I'll find those hearing aids this afternoon and should have be able to hear at least by tonight. If you missed the moving in party at my house yesterday, never fear. There will be another one. Kim will be up here probably the end of the week of the 20th. And so we're really excited about that. And Ted and Nolan are driving down or flying down with me. And we're going to pack up the truck. And you don't have to go to that moving party. But we'll be back up here probably, hopefully, on Saturday. And so if you're available on that Saturday, we're looking for help. It took us all of 35 minutes to move everything out of a one-bedroom apartment down two flights of stairs and get it packed into the truck. Ted is the master of packing Tetris, and he was able to get everything that I own into a small trailer. That's a little depressing. You watch all that stuff that you've worked to accumulate over your lifetime go into the back of a trailer, and you think, wow, I thought I'd managed to get more than that. But I hadn't. This morning, when you came in, you probably noticed a couple of things. We have a new format for the bulletin, and we're going to keep working on that and trying to improve it. So if you didn't pick up one this morning, pick up one of the bulletins. It's in the back. We are not studying Colossians. We are studying Galatians in the morning class period. Ted was glad that we're studying Galatians, even though I put Colossians in here. And the second thing that you'll find are some activity sheets that the children can participate in. We have two different levels of these activity sheets, and you'll see those in the back. So choose one or both. We don't have an awful lot of the clipboards, but we're going to make sure that we get enough clipboards so that the kids can work on these. So when you come in to the assembly, make sure that you pick one of these up so that the kids will be able to participate in some learning activities that are appropriate for their specific age. We're going to do our very best to make sure that we are as inclusive as we can possibly be of all of those people that are with us on Sunday morning. For this year, we're going to be focusing on a particular vision. And I call it Vision 2020. Isn't that cute? My wife came up with that. That wasn't me. I'm not that smart. But we're going to focus on the year 2020 and our vision, and hopefully we're going to cause our vision to be 2020. And what we want to do is understand to the very best of our ability what Jesus' mission was when he came here as the representative of his Father, and make his mission our focus in this coming year. So we're going to be returning. Not every discussion that we have together will be based on a 2020 vision, but we will be returning to this idea frequently throughout this year Because I think it's important that we establish a goal for ourselves, that we establish a theme, that we have a way to pull together to make something happen in the year 2020 that we can be extremely proud of. So, the way we begin is we... Oh, and I did it.
As much as I try not to fat finger this, I did. I'm sorry. Let me get back. What do I have to do, Ted? Go.
Letter B.
I'm sorry?
Letter B.
Letter B? Yep. Aha! Okay. I'm gonna have to lose some weight because my finger just pushes way too many buttons. The way that we're going to do this is we're going to start with Jesus' explanation of what his mission was. If you're familiar with the New Testament at all, you're familiar with the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Those are not in alphabetical order, by the way. In fact, they're in reverse alphabetical order. When I was a student and when I was on faculty and I would publish papers, a lot of times we published and put the author's names in alphabetical order. And it was always nice if you got to be the first one. As there's something valuable about your name beginning with the letter C. You get to go first sometimes. Well, I'm sure that Luke, who recorded what he calls the sermon on the plain, wished that he had been earlier in the canon, because we always refer to this as the Sermon on the Mount. I think they're the same thing. It just seems that one records it as happening in a different part geographically of that area. But Jesus explains his mission. If you turn to Luke, the 6th chapter, you will find those Beatitudes that we're so familiar with from the book of Matthew also included in the book of Luke. So we're going to look at Jesus as he explains his mission in terms of those Beatitudes. But before we do that, we have to spend at least a little bit of time trying to understand the world that Jesus interacted with. As Ted pointed out so well this morning, anytime you try to understand a letter, you have to understand who it was written to and when it was written. Because if you don't understand who it was written to, you can draw all kinds of improper conclusions about the letter, because you think it was written to you when it might not have been written to you. So we're going to try to understand a little bit about the world that Jesus interacted with. That world has a lot of components. Some we're familiar with and some we're not so familiar with. Okay. Letter B again, huh? Nope. Okay.
The first component of the world that Jesus interacted with was the Roman Empire. It's kind of the elephant on the block. Elephant in the room. You really can't ignore the big dog on the block. The Roman Empire, we're vaguely familiar with it. This is a kind of a map of the ancient world. And right over here, you see the province of Judea. They were having to deal with the Romans. Now, Judea, in terms of the Romans, was a particularly troublesome region. They just didn't adapt very well to having the Romans be the big dog on the block. And they fought wars almost constantly with this province of Judea. It was so bad that Roman rulers would do anything not to be posted to Judea. They just didn't want to go there. It was a backwater. It was a place where no matter what you did, things weren't going to turn out well. And so you had people who were doing all kinds of things. In fact, that's probably what caused Jesus to be crucified, because the Roman authorities didn't want an uprising in Jerusalem at that time, so they were more than willing to put Jesus to death if that's what it took to pacify the Jews. But this is a picture of the Roman Empire, and it is led by the Roman emperors. They had taken to themselves the right to declare what was right and what was wrong. It was not up to the gods. It was not up to anybody else. It was the Roman emperors who got to decide what was right and wrong. In fact, the Roman emperors considered themselves to be gods, and they insisted that they be worshipped as gods. But they wanted to have the right to decide what was right and wrong. In the beginning of the Roman Empire, it had been generally a matter of consensus. Or perhaps it was a matter that was decided by the extensive Roman court system. But by the time Jesus comes on the scene, the Roman Empire is ruled by emperors who decide what is right and what is wrong. And they back that up with the most well-trained army that the ancient world had ever seen. It wasn't a small army. They had 10 legions. They had so many people in their army that they lost a legion. They were the great power of their day. And you read about these armies, and you read about the Romans, particularly from the Jewish perspective, not so much in the biblical information as in some extra-biblical information. How many of you are familiar with what's called the Apocrypha? It's a group of books not inspired. There's some question as to whether some of them may have been inspired, but generally speaking, most people don't think that they're inspired. They were written probably between the 1st and the 5th centuries, or at least during that period of time. They are included in usually a Catholic edition of the New Testament, or a Catholic edition of the Bible, and they are called the Apocrypha. It's an extensive list of books. Sometimes they're included, sometimes they're not included. Some are really good to read, like the Wisdom of Esdras. It reads very much like the Psalms and the Proverbs. There are some that are really just fanciful, that are just silly. Bell and the Dragon is a record of the childhood miracles of Jesus. There's no sense in reading that. But there are four historical books that are very much like 1st and 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings. They read the same way. They're called 1st and 2nd and 3rd and 4th Maccabees. These cover the period of time after the close of the Old Testament up to about the time that Jesus appears on the scene. They're fascinating books, and they're generally accepted as pretty accurate history. Of course, it's written from a Jewish perspective. So it's going to tell you certain things from the Jewish perspective about the rise of the Roman Empire and the relationships that existed with the Romans. A second set of books that you might be interested in reading is the Annals of the Jewish People. It was written by Flavius Josephus. It is a very long book. And again,
It's written from the perspective of a man that was clearly Jewish, but served in the Roman army. And so he wrote the history of the Jews from the Roman perspective. But it's generally speaking a pretty accurate description. And you'll find a lot of times it corresponds beautifully with what the Bible has to say. The third book that you might be interested in is not as extensive. It's called The Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah. It was written by Alfred Edersheim. Wonderful book. It's about that thick. And it has really tiny print. You know, when you read most books, you read the footnotes, and the footnotes are in that little tiny print. The whole thing of Edersheim's Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah is written in that little tiny print. But it's a wonderful book if you want to understand what was going on at the time that Jesus came to the earth and began to do his work. Now, beyond the Romans, when you start reading about Jesus, you start reading about certain Jewish factions, religious factions or sectarians, that just seem to appear suddenly in the book of Matthew. They aren't there in Malachi. And then you get to Matthew and suddenly there are these different people and they're addressed, some of them extensively by Jesus. The first one we'll talk about is the Pharisees. The Pharisees was a group of people. They never were very large. By the time of Jesus, the Pharisees probably numbered around 6,000, something like that. The Pharisees were extremely zealous for the law. But the Pharisees were willing to supplement what the law said with interpretations of the law. In fact, the Pharisees, describing themselves, said, "We are like a well-plastered cistern. We never lose a drop of truth." They traced their lineage all the way back to Moses. And they said, what happened? Now, this is the Pharisees' explanation for it. Understand, this is not Moses' explanation for where the Pharisees came from. This is what the Pharisees said about where they came from. That just as Moses went up on the mountain, received the Ten Commandments, and some extra words from God that he explained to the Jews, so we have read the law and we have extra information that's important to you as you try to keep the law. The Pharisees were the group that became the famous rabbis. They wrote the Talmud, they wrote different interpretations, and really thought of their interpretations as being on an equal footing with what God had actually said. In fact, sometimes they thought that their interpretation was even more important than what God had said. There was one Pharisee who said that if he could only have two books, it would be the Talmud and the interpretations, and he left out the Torah. But they began to write these new interpretations. The Pharisees arose during the period between Malachi and Matthew. Well, I guess you could trace their beginnings back to the Babylonian captivity and the growth of the synagogue system. Now, remember what happened when the Jews went into Babylonian captivity. No longer did they have access to the temple. So they had to have some kind of way to continue to worship and to learn about God while they were off in Babylon. They developed what was called the synagogue. The synagogue was a way for them to come together and study and pray together without being able to go to the temple that was in Jerusalem. In fact, the temple that was in Jerusalem had been destroyed. So the Pharisees grow up during this period with the synagogue development. they are extremely judgmental. You remember the case when the Pharisee and the publican went up to pray together, and the Pharisee made the most impressive statement to me at the beginning of his prayer, "God, I thank you that I'm not like this publican." I have never heard anybody that brazen about their judgment on someone else. But that was the Pharisees. That was not uncommon. The Pharisees, as much as they wanted to say that they were separatists and they wanted to maintain purity, they still wanted the affection of the masses. They were still concerned that everybody else thought that they were the smartest people in the room. And so they would make long prayers in the streets. The Pharisees were, by and large, the middle class group. They were not the wealthy group. And because of that, the Pharisees tended, to be so separate that, well, there was one group of Pharisees that were called the bruised and bleeding Pharisees. They felt like the law required them never to look on a woman because if they looked on a woman, they might have lust for that woman. And so they walked around all day long with their eyes closed. Now you can imagine what they looked like at the end of the day. It wasn't that they kept their eyes down, they kept their eyes closed. So they would run into walls, they would fall down. And it's with good reason that they were called the bruised and bleeding Pharisees. This was the group that said you cannot sit in the door of your house on the Sabbath because you might try to trap an animal inside and then you would wait until Sunday to kill it. So you can't sit in the door of your house on the Sabbath. They were the ones that said you can't drag a stick on the ground if your profession is teacher on the Sabbath because somebody might interpret that as writing. It's a little silly. They said that a woman could not look in a mirror on the Sabbath. Now, get this. You cannot look in the mirror on the Sabbath because you might find a gray hair. And if you found a gray hair, you would be tempted to pull it out, and that would be work. Well, that's the kind of people that the Pharisees were. And Jesus is going to have to interact with these folks.
We've already seen what this was like. Remember, it was the Pharisees that went down to Galatia and said, you have to keep the extra requirements that we're laying on people. Just keeping the gospel is not enough. You're going to have to do more. I think Ted pointed that out well when we were talking about the introduction to Galatians.
The second group that Jesus interacted with was the Sadducees. And when we think about the Sadducees, we tend to run to the notion that the Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection. That's true, but there was a lot more to the Sadducees than just the fact that they didn't believe in the resurrection. The Sadducees, for the most part, were the very wealthy Jews. They lived in Jerusalem. The Sadducees traced their genealogy all the way back to Zadok the priest, because the Sadducees were the priestly class. The priests were different than the rabbis. Remember, the rabbis were the ones who were willing to write the Talmud, who were willing to write the interpretations. They were the Pharisee group. The Sadducees were the priests. The Sadducees focused almost exclusively on the temple. And because they focused so much on the temple, when Jesus talked about this temple being torn down,
That really rankled the Sadducees. That really bothered them. Perhaps more than it bothered even the Pharisees. They were focused so much on the temple that they pretty much ignored the synagogue system. They also decided that they should follow specifically what God said, and that meant just the Torah, the first five books. They didn't even read the prophets. That's how focused they were on the law. And because they were the wealthy class, they were the ones who, for the most part, oppressed the poor. These would have been the bankers. These would have been the people who would just gather up widows' houses and just put them out in the streets because they didn't care about it. It was an investment for them. The Sadducees were the ones who curried political favor from the Romans. And in fact, the Sadducees are described often as the Hellenizers. They were the ones who would have adopted Greek names. They would have refused circumcision. Many of them didn't even speak Hebrew. These were the Sadducees. They're the wealthy ones. They're the ones that look really nice when they walk down the street. Then the last group that Jesus would have encountered would have been the ascetics. The most well-known of the broader category of the ascetics would have been the Essenes. The Essenes lived in the Qumran community. It is a group that was responsible for preserving some of the Old Testament writings, and we call them the Dead Sea Scrolls. We have found many of those books included in the writings of the Essenes. Now, they also wrote extensively about the way that people ought to live. They felt like they, in order to be able to worship God effectively, you had to turn your back completely on the political society that existed in your day. They never went to Jerusalem. They moved out to the mountains so that they could be away from all of the distractions and the ugliness and the filth that was part of what they perceived as being Judaism at that time. It's fascinating to read some of the things that they wrote. You can learn a lot about baptism when you read about the writings of the Essenes and the rules and regulations that they had for the Qumran community. Baptism was a big part of the rules that they had established. They grew up during the period between the Testaments. They never were very large. They never exerted any political influence, which you might expect because they refused political influence. They didn't have money. They were just kind of out in the wilderness. In fact, a lot of people would suggest that John the Baptist was close to being an Essene or an ascetic if he wasn't actually one of this group. And then the final thing that sets the stage for Jesus and his ministry is the prequel. It's John the Baptizer. John has begun preaching in the wilderness by the River Jordan and was frequently baptizing people in the Jordan because there was a lot of water there. John preached essentially three things. Return to God. You guys have lost your way. Return to God. And when he encountered the sectarians, he called them a generation of vipers. He said, who warned you to come out here and listen to what I was saying? Who warned you to flee from the wrath that is to come? He said, you don't want any part of what I'm talking about, because I'm talking about just plainly and simply returning to God. The second thing that John said was, the kingdom of God is at hand. Now that's going to rankle the Romans. The Romans don't like that because they are the kingdom. So John is saying the kingdom of God, or the kingdom of heaven, is at hand. It's about time for God to establish his rule in a very new way. And then the last thing that John said was, the Messiah is coming. Get ready. Prepare yourself. Now that's the world that Jesus interacted with. Tonight we'll talk about the Beatitudes just a little bit. We're going to keep returning to this idea of trying to understand what Jesus' mission was. And you have to understand Jesus' mission in terms of the world that he interacted with. So we'll keep returning to this throughout the entirety of this year. But keep thinking about Vision 2020. That's going to be what we're going to try to accomplish in this coming year. If you would like to come with us in trying to accomplish these things for God, then we want to give you an opportunity to accomplish that as we stand and we sing a song. It's a time when you can think about yourself. Do you see yourself as a Pharisee, as a Sadducee, as an Essene, as a Roman? What's your need? Think about that. Come to God. We'll help you to do that. You can put him on in baptism. It is such a wonderful opportunity. So we're going to stand, and Ron's going to lead us in a song. Think about it while we sing the song. About it while we sing the song. About it.